We're going to be looking at a pretty large swath of the Bible this morning, but I won't read the whole thing during this time. Let me just set the scene for you before I read some of that passage to you. There's a man named David who was king of Israel, and his throne and power and really his reputation had been usurped through his son Absalom. Absalom had declared himself king. David had been pushed out of the throne. Absalom embarrassed and stomped upon the name of David publicly in ways that were despicable and hard to recover from. So David's pushed out of his kingdom. His rebel son is on the throne. And David, in our passage today, he gets the troops that he has together and begins to plan and carry out a counterattack. He's going to get the throne back. That's the plan. And so, as you are able, if you would stand, and I'm going to read sections. So first, from verse 5, this is, as David sends his men out to battle to reclaim his throne, this is what he says to them. The king ordered Joab, Abishai, and Ittai, those are his commanders, he ordered them, deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom. And all the people heard when the king gave orders to all the commanders about Absalom. So David is sending his people out to fight to reclaim his throne, and his words are, go gentle with Absalom. We continue reading in verse 6, this little summary of what happened on that day. So the army went out into the field against Israel. That's Absalom's group. And the battle was fought in the forest of Ephraim. And the men of Israel, that's Absalom's, the men of Israel were defeated there by the servants of David. And the loss there was great on that day, 20,000 men. The battle spread over the face of all the country, and the forest devoured more people that day than the sword. So David's troops win the day. We will learn that Absalom was not dealt gently with. He was killed while he was in a defenseless position. And they send news back to the king that we have won, your throne will be restored, but Absalom is dead. And in verse 33, if you'll skip down to 33, this is David's response to the news that his son was dead. And the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he wept, David said, oh, my son, Absalom, my son, Absalom, would I had died instead of you. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son. In September of 2018, a man named Botham Jean was in his apartment in Dallas, Texas, eating ice cream and relaxing. He lived in apartment 318 on the third floor of his apartment complex. The person who lived above him was a Dallas police officer in 418. That night, she got off a long shift, went to the wrong floor of her apartment building, entered Botham Jean's apartment, and thinking that he was in her apartment and was intruding in her apartment, proceeded to shoot and kill him. In the last couple of months, the trial has happened for this Dallas police officer. And what has been amazing about that trial is that you've had two things happening, two desires happening among the people who were impacted most by that killing. Maybe you've seen the response of Botham Jean's brother. It went viral, and it was amazing as he was given opportunity to address his brother's killer, and he recommended to her life in Jesus Christ and asked the judge if he might rise and go and hug her. And he did, and she wept in his arms. Botham Jean's mother was adamant in seeking justice for her son's death. She longed to see justice done and her son's life honored through the doing of justice. And so you had in this little event, this microcosm of something that we all deal with, this tension that we have living in this world. We want to live in a world that works right, and where wrong has punishments and where right has rewards. We want to live in a world where the guilty don't get away with it. And at the same time, while we have these demands for justice that we all feel, this is not a Christian thing. This is a human thing that we think the world's supposed to work a certain way. And we have these demands for justice from our heart. But at the same time, we have these longings for love and the hope that there is something like forgiveness, or that it doesn't always have to be just. I have a friend who is an immigration attorney, and he says that basically everybody's philosophy of immigration is keep all the illegals out except the ones that I know and love. That we tend to have this perspective on the world, but then when it gets personal, we find competing desires. So you've got the demands for justice, and you've got the longings of love. That's what you've got in this passage as well. You have got personified in the lives of Absalom, Joab, and David. You have got the demands for justice. Absalom has overthrown God's king. Absalom has said, I know that this is God's appointed man, but I want his spot and all of his power. And I'll kill him if that's what it takes. And David's been pushed out. And David, even though he has been pushed out by his son, finds these longings. Go gentle on my boy. So I'm going to read a little, I'm going to walk you through this passage, and then we'll draw some conclusions and see where this tension takes us, these competing tensions of a demand for justice and the longings of love. All right, so here's the way the passage shakes out. Verses 1 through 5 of 18 are all about the preparation. You've got David divides his army into three, and he's got these commanders. And when they're headed out to battle, well, first they say, he says, I'll lead you out. And then they say, no, 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 no. You're 61 years old, pops. You stay in the back. We'll go fight the battle. That way you can send help from the back if we need it. So David says, I'll do whatever you guys say. David stays back. They go into battle. And as the hundreds and thousands are going out, I read to you before in verse 5, David says, he orders his commanders, quote, deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom. And then the biblical writer very clearly says, and all the people heard the king when he gave orders to all the commanders about Absalom. There are no doubts what's supposed to happen. No doubts what the king has ordered and desires. What his heart longs for. And also you see David's confidence. He believes that God will restore his kingship. And so he sends them out to battle. We read the summary, and now let's read the actual news article beginning in verse 9. The summary is David's team is victorious. Here's the details beginning in verse 9. And Absalom happened to meet the servants of David. Absalom was riding on his mule, and the mule went under the thick branches of a great terebinth, and his head caught fast in the oak, and he was suspended between heaven and earth while the mule that was under him went on. Now, I had to Google and find out that there's some mules who can actually run fast. I'm thinking, why are you on this slow animal out there? Now, mule was often also a kingly animal to be on. And so Absalom, the king, is on this kingly animal. You remember earlier in the headline article, it said that the forest devoured more people than the sword. David had, though he was the one mounting the counterattack, he had sort of determined the field on which they would battle in these forests of Ephraim. And it was thick and overgrown, and his men knew it better than anybody. If you've ever heard about people who have gone to war against Afghanistan, that it is a very difficult terrain because they know it so well and they know how to operate in it. That's the way David's men were with the forests of Ephraim. They knew it, they could handle it better, and that's part of the reason that they defeated what in this passage is called the armies of Israel, which were those under Absalom's command. But Absalom, David's son, who the Bible goes on and on about how he was a gorgeous man. He was a hunk, and he loved his hair. He cut it once a year, and there were 5 pounds that were to be cut off, is what it says in the Bible. He was big on himself. He had a desire for his father's throne, and he took it. He's out there defending his newly established kingdom against his father's armies, against the Lord's armies who fight for his father, David. And he's out there, and somehow it says that his head got caught in an oak, and the mule goes out from under him, and he is hanging defenseless, just hanging in a tree. And then our text picks up in verse 18, and a certain man saw it. So this soldier sees it, and he goes and tells Joab, "Behold, I saw Absalom hanging in a tree." And Joab said to the man who told him, "What, you saw him?" Intimating, "What do you mean you saw him? You should have killed him. He's the rebel to the throne. You saw him? Why then did you not strike him here to the ground? I would have been glad to give you 10 pieces of silver and a belt." But the man said to Joab, "Even if I felt in my hand the weight of 10,000 pieces of silver, I wouldn't reach out my hand against the king's son. For in our hearing, the king commanded you and the other commanders, Abishai and Ittai, quote, 'For my sake, protect the young man Absalom.' On the other hand, if I had dealt treacherously against Absalom's life, and there's nothing hidden from the king, then you yourself would have stood aloof." In other words, if I would have killed him, I doubt you would have had my back on this. And Joab says, verse 14, "I will not waste time like this with you." And Joab took 3 javelins in his hand and thrust them into the heart of Absalom while he was still alive in the oak. And 10 young men, Joab's arm bearers, surrounded Absalom and struck him and killed him. So the usurper of the throne has been killed. Justice has been meted out. Joab, one of David's most loyal soldiers, Joab, who thinks politically and thinks realistically, this is the guy who took the throne. As long as he's alive, there's not going to be peace. I know what the king ordered, but this is the path to peace in the kingdom. To restore his kingdom, there's got to be this justice meted out. And Joab proceeds to bring about the justice that the rebel to the throne is defeated and killed. And Joab then, verse 16, he blows the trumpet, and the troops came back from pursuing Israel, for Joab restrained them. So Joab, as soon as Absalom's dead, he just tweets out, "War is over. We're going home. We've won. No reason to keep the battle going." They take Joab, verse 17, they take Absalom and throw him into a great pit in the forest and raised over him a very great heap of stones. This is one of the most dehumanizing way that they would bury somebody back then. And all Israel fled, everyone to his own home. Now Absalom in his lifetime had taken and set up for himself the pillar that is in the king's valley. For Absalom had said, "I have no son to keep my name in remembrance." And he called the pillar after his own name, and it is called Absalom's Monument to this day. Then verse 19, let me just tell you what happens here. So you have these two men who are sent to bring David the news. And the first guy who is sent out is a Cushite, he's a foreigner. He's sent out to tell David the news. And then there's this fella who loves to bring the news, and he knows the area more. And he leaves second, but he arrives first. And he comes to David and he says, "We have won the battle. Your kingdom has been restored." And David says, "How about Absalom? How about Absalom?" And that messenger who was sent out first but arrived second, who knew exactly what had happened to Absalom, he goes, "War is chaotic. I'm not really sure. Your son, I didn't see it exactly where." He just hems and haws. He says there was great confusion out there. But then the foreigner who had been sent first and arrived second said, he says in verse 31, "Good news for my lord the king, for the Lord has delivered you this day from the hand of all who rose up against you." The king said to the Cushite, "Is it well with the young man Absalom?" And the Cushite answered, "May the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise up against you for evil, be like that young man." And the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he wept, he said, "Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would I have died instead of you?" So Joab has these demands of justice that he knows only in putting down the rebellion can the one who is king be rightly restored and honored. And David's got these longings of a father who longs to see his son dealt gently with. And they are in tension. And so David is wailing. David is weeping. David is distraught that it seems like David can't realize my kingdom's been restored. God's kingdom has been set aright. David's only seeing this through the eyes of a weeping father. And Joab, in this moment, in a sense, goes Colonel Jessup on David. Because he goes to David and he says, "Look, you've got this army out there who has risked their lives to restore your kingdom and to protect your family and to bring things back to the way God designed them to be with you on the throne. And they are coming back from battle and they are hanging their heads in shame because of the way you're acting. Now blow your nose, wipe your eyes, and get out there and watch your troops come back from battle victorious. Let me just read it to you. And so it was chapter 19. It was told to Joab, behold, the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom. So the victory that day was turned to mourning for all the people. For the people heard that day, the king is grieving for his son. And the people stole into the city that day as people steal in who are ashamed when they flee battle. The king covered his face and the king cried with a loud voice, O Absalom, Absalom, my son, my son. Then Joab came into the house to the king and said, you have today covered with shame the faces of all your servants who have this day saved your life and the lives of your sons and your daughters and the lives of your wives and your concubines because you love those who hate you and you hate those who love you. For you have made it clear today the commanders and servants are nothing to you. For today I know that if Absalom were alive and all of us were dead today, you'd be pleased. Now, therefore, arise, go out and speak kindly to your servants, for I swear by the Lord, if you don't go, not a man will stay with you this night, and this will be worse for you than all the evil that has come upon you from your youth until now. And then the king arose and took his seat in the gate, and the people were all told, behold, the king is sitting in the gate, and all the people came before the king. So you've got this passage of this story that upon my first readings, I thought, what is the point? You've got this heartbroken father on the one hand with his longings of love, and yet you've got justice meted out in Absalom being brought down. And that's why I titled this sermon, The Eye Could Not See Any Point. That is, trivially, that is the end of the longest sentence in literature, which is found in William Faulkner's book, Absalom, Absalom. I took one word out, but the eye could not see any point. What is the point of this? Is this a passage about family dynamics? Is this a passage about, hey, sometimes you can't do what your boss says to do? Is this a what? This passage, I think, sets up a tension that this passage does not answer for us. What do we do with the fact that David is right and that Joab is right? Joab longs for justice. And we want to live in a world where there's justice. And David longs for mercy and kindness. And we want to live in a world that has mercy and kindness. And so in this passage, there is this tension created that this passage does not answer. And so here you get a little clue into how to read your Bible. Let me mention that to you for a second. Here's the deal. This book, the Bible, is not a collection of little stories. This little part we have here is a tragedy. There are bodies strewn, and ain't nobody living happily ever after in this passage we read today. But you see, this passage we read today is part of the large story that God is telling in the world and in our world today. Do you see this chapter about Absalom, Joab, and David? It is a sad chapter. And it ends with a tension that is unresolved. As you pull back from the Bible, and we do this because Jesus told us to. Here's some examples. Luke 24, Jesus said this. Jesus did this, beginning with Moses and all the prophets. Jesus interpreted all the scriptures say concerning himself. The apostle Paul would write in Romans 15, whatever was written in the former days, all the Old Testament, was written for us that we might have hope. And finally, Jesus said to a group of people who knew their Bibles well, you search the scriptures for life, but you don't realize they bear witness to me. And you refuse to come to me for life. And so there's Jesus telling us, if you're going to understand David and Absalom and Joab, you've got to see me. Because that's what they're about. To give you hope. All of these former things were written. And so that's the only place where we're going to find a solution to the tension between the demands for justice that we all feel and the longings for mercy and love. I don't know where your entry point to the story was, whether you identified more with Absalom, with Joab and like, doggone it, justice has to be, or whether you identify more with David, like, hey, can't we work this out? But all of our entry into the story actually is with Absalom. Why? Because he saw the king who was supposed to be ruling and said, I want to rule. That's the picture that the Bible paints of our posture. Did you hear what we had in our call to worship? For the Lord, the Most High, is awesome. He's a great king over all the earth. And he is. The Bible makes known that there is one king who is Lord over all the earth. And that all of these people who owe him allegiance and loyalty and all of our adoration and love and trust, you and me and every other person rebel against his authority and against his kingship and try to take the throne of our lives and of this world on our own. Absalom represents us the most. And God is just and right whenever he judges somebody who has rebelled against his reign. He is holy and without competition. And anybody who raises the fist at him, he will push down. And so that's where we find ourselves. And so I guess God just wiped the face of the earth with all of these rebels. But we find in the heart of God the same thing we find in the heart of David. A longing for love. The longings of love. Can we work this out? And God, in his infinite wisdom, yes, works it out. Listen to what Paul says in Romans chapter 3. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God and are justified by his grace as a gift through the redemption that's in Christ Jesus, whom God put forward as a propitiation by his blood to be received by faith. This was to show God's righteousness, because in God's divine forbearance he had passed over former sins. This was to show God's righteousness at the present time, demands of justice, so that he might be both just and the justifier of the one who has faith in Jesus. And so God, years later in the life of his son, relieves the tension that is created for us in 2 Samuel 18. That there is a way that God can be both just. We live in a world where things are going to be right. And the justifier. There's hope for us, even though things are going to be right. God's power and his wisdom were at work when his son, and this is what this table symbolizes, what it is. That God's power and wisdom are at work when his beloved son, he does what David spoke of but could not do. Oh, if I had died instead of you. But Jesus literally does die instead of the rebel. Jesus literally does die instead of the usurper of God's throne. That the longings of love that God has for his people, they get to be met. And the demands of justice that a holy God has for his world, they are met as well. This is why Psalm 85 says that there is a sense in which truth and grace meet in Jesus Christ.